When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and there's Jerry Rowland on Stuff You Should Know. My vocal cords are about to split wide open.
Are they?
Sure.
You don't sound weird.
Oh, really?
No, you sound very Josh-like. What is that?
Izzy. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Sparkling black bear. What, you got a little throat thing?
No, you know, like when you just talk too much.
Have you been talking too much?
I guess. Or you're stressed.
I was under the impression that aside from these 2 hours, you'd just sort of sit in silence. And you and Yumi pantomime everything.
We do interpretive dance.
Yeah. You're like, got to save my vocal cords, babe.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. You sound normal.
Well, I'm glad I sound normal because I don't feel like I do. But if I sound normal, who cares about how I feel?
Oh, come on. Everyone cares.
No.
This podcast, by the way, has perhaps the best band name ever. Right there in its title.
I think it's overdone.
Charismatic Megafauna?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like, there's so many bands named that? Or you just think the name is too much?
Yeah. The latter of those two.
I think it's pretty good. No?
Charismatic Megafauna. I mean, maybe for your second band.
Oh, your side gig?
No. Like, the second before, you know, your third, fourth, or fifth one where you finally hit it.
Gotcha. I'm still waiting on that.
Are you?
No. El Cheapo is...
The first and last.
But a hobby.
The Alpha and the Omega.
And nothing in between.
How do you like my Latin? Or is that Greek? No, this is off to a terrible start.
No, this is great.
So I saw a t-shirt the other day. I should give credit where credit's due. Yumi saw a t-shirt the other day and showed it to me. It was pretty awesome. You know, it was World Wildlife Fund logo.
Because you were just walking around kicking rocks.
Right. She's now like, hey, looking up.
Look up every once
look
in a
up.
While.
She pantomimed look up.
Right.
No, I pantomimed back. Okay. It was the World Wildlife Fund logo with the panda, but there was another panda coming up behind it with a folding chair, which is a play on the WWF.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
Great, great t-shirt.
It is good.
But the fact that the panda is the front man for the World Wildlife Foundation.
Uh-huh. The lead singer.
One of the biggest conservation organizations in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
Is actually a pretty good example of the use of a charismatic megafauna.
Yeah, which is also called a flagship species, and it's a term that came around in the 80s. I tried to track it back to the person who thought of it.
Couldn't either.
Couldn't do it.
Let's go with Jack Hanna.
All right.
It's possible.
Yeah, it is possible. But basically, it's very simple. This is a koala or a panda.
Right.
No, but sort of, yes. It's an animal that is like the poster child in advertising for zoos and conservation groups because they're so stinking cute and charismatic that people open their wallets to give money toward conservation efforts.
You just make it rain on them.
Yeah. Like, look at that panda. I can't. My wallet is out all of a sudden, and I'm just pulling Benjamins out.
Right.
And dropping them along this pandas trail.
Yeah.
That is charismatic megafauna.
It is. It's as simple as that. And along the way, since it was kind of picked up and coined and started to take seriously by conservationists, it's become, you know, much bigger and debated and everything. But
yeah,
it really helps to understand it and bring it down to size when you realize that it's a conservation idea,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually a marketing term.
Yeah.
That's what the whole thing is. It has nothing to do with the importance of the species to its ecosystem.
Not necessarily.
It doesn't even necessarily have to do with how endangered the species is.
Yeah.
It really has to do with how cute and relatable humans find the species so that it will generate the most financial contributions possible toward conservation.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And this, we did an episode, I think a pretty good one, on zoos quite a while back, and the controversy around zoos and if we should even have zoos. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember us both sort of agreeing, like, some zoos are terrible.
Yeah.
And then most zoos, or I don't know about most, but many zoos these days do such great work. They are now necessary and to conservation efforts, or go a long way toward conservation efforts.
Yeah.
But we still, like, it's a little creepy sometimes when you see an elephant that should roam for thousands of miles in a, you know, relatively small area.
It makes you think better off dead? Who knows?
Yeah, but then, like, man, it's just that thing with zoos again. Then you also see, like, a child get inspired to grow up to be a zoologist because they fell in love with the elephant at the zoo.
Yeah.
And then they lead conservation efforts. So there's captive breeding programs that bring animals back from the verge of extinction.
Right. All this is supposed to happen, but how often does it actually happen is my thing.
I think the conservation efforts are constantly happening at most zoos. You mean specifically bringing an animal back?
Yeah. Or how many zoologists are actually inspired by going to a zoo as a child? Like, I mean, and is there a better way to do it? I'm sure we got into this in the zoos episode. Since that, I don't think I've been to a zoo. I think I've been to a zoo once, and I was like, I can't go to zoos anymore.
Well, I went to the San Diego Zoo when we did our show there.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm a member of the Atlanta Zoo because I have a small child.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing to do with a small kid because it introduces them to animals, which they love.
Mm-hmm.
It's really neat for them to be able to see these things in person.
Yeah.
And it, quite frankly, wears her out. Which is kind of the one thing you're trying to do as a parent.
Like,
is to make your child exhausted.
Look at how crazy that chimpanzee is from being locked up its whole life.
I was like, I bet you can't run from one animal exhibiting zoocosis to the next as fast as you can. So anyway, I've been to the Atlanta Zoo here a few times recently because of that. And still have mixed feelings, you know?
Sure.
But it's hard to not see, like, your 20-month-old delight at seeing, I mean, one of these visits, we caught a full-on ape show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, you know, sometimes you go to the zoo and everyone's hiding. You're like, oh, well, that's neat.
Right.
There's a tiger behind that rock somewhere. But we had a good day where this family of apes was just playing like crazy. And, like, this huge, was it a gorilla? I can never remember which are apes.
I think a gorilla is a great ape.
Well, this big daddy gorilla, I mean, just to see the strength of this dude moving around and jumping around was amazing. And he would jump off of a rock and clap his hands. And the little kids were playing, little baby gorillas.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was just, like, literally in awe of what they were witnessing.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It was like they pumped them full of steroids.
Right.
Or cocaine. Maybe they did.
Right then. That gorilla family was showing off their charisma.
Yeah.
They have natural inherent charisma as far as being a charismatic species goes because they're so relatable by humans.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things. Like, hey, this thing kind of looks like you.
Right.
Don't you like it more than other animals?
Don't you want to give us some money to protect them in the wild?
Yeah.
And that's the point of the charismatic megafauna usage.
Yeah. That we're talking gorillas, pandas, koalas, tigers.
Dolphins?
Sure. Penguins.
Killer whales? Thanks to Free Willy?
They include lions in here, and I guess so because they're magnificent, but lions don't do a lot. most of the big cats just sort of lay around.
Sure.
They're not running around like the gorillas.
Yeah. You got to throw your beer can at them to get them going.
They had an elephant paint a picture. They did this little, like...
At the zoo?
Uh-huh.
Did they?
They put a paintbrush in its mouth and would hold up a canvas, and the elephant would, like, you know...
Someone else would smack away the riding crop until it did what you wanted.
No, it wasn't like that. But so
that's actually... You can buy paintings by elephants, but apparently they're not very well treated.
Yeah, I don't think that's... I think at the Atlanta Zoo, they treat their animals very nicely.
Sure, sure. I'm not saying that, but I mean, on the internet, you can buy paintings by elephants. And
yeah.
If you actually look into how the elephants are treated, you probably wouldn't want the painting. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a super activist person, but...
No, I don't mind. It's a, you know, it's a controversy. And you know what? There was a tiger there that was clearly exhibiting zoocosis. Mm-hmm. He was pacing back and forth. And all I could do was think about how much that sucks for that tiger to be there.
Well, it goes to that solitary confinement thing, the episode that we did. It's virtually the same thing. I think you even brought up zoocosis in that episode, too, you know?
Man, that's quite a long-winded sort of intro, huh?
I guess so.
Should we take a break already? And
yeah, I'm a little worked up.
Get it back on the tracks?
Yeah. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month. All right. I shot Josh with a sedative from an elephant gun. Now you're drifting off.
I'm feeling pretty good. You got a pretty good buzz.
All right. So we were talking about, well, a lot of things, but let's get back to charismatic. What's wrong with me today?
So I read this article on charismatic megafauna. And
yes.
It was a survey of other journal, like scholarly articles. And I think they read like 70 of them because they were basically trying to figure out what a charismatic megafauna definition was.
Right.
Apparently it was just all over the place. It's extremely non-scientific, I think, is part of the problem.
Well, it's because it's a marketing tool.
Man, these people were trying to like whip it into shape. The best definition they found, or the best explanation of what makes an animal charismatic was from a paper called Non-Human Charisma by a Jay Lorimer, written in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I think, 4 points. One was detectability and distinctiveness.
Okay.
Anybody can look at a panda and be like, that's a panda.
Oh, yeah.
I love pandas. Look, there's one right there. There's a panda.
Well, and I think they interviewed a couple of zoologists, and one of them even said, you might even know a few facts about this as just a regular non-zoo enthusiast.
Right.
Like, pandas eat whatever the heck pandas
bamboo.
Eat. Well, I was going to say that, but then I thought that was a koala, and I was going to
koalas eat eucalyptus.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, pandas eat bamboo.
Yeah.
By the bushel.
Mm-hmm.
But you can point out a panda. You're not like, oh, I can't tell if that's a camel rat or a humpback rat, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or it's just the same as everything else. It has to be its own thing.
Yeah.
That stands out. Another one is socioeconomic biases.
Uh-huh.
So basically how a society feels about the animal.
Sure.
Right? So.
Like, do I want to kill the rat?
Right.
Or hug the panda?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Aesthetics is another one. Like, mm-hmm. Is it cute? Is it cuddly? Is it beautiful? Is it majestic? Does it look like, you know, I don't know, a fat dude, right? You know, does it like kind of look like it should be wearing a hard hat and carrying like a lunch pail, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Is it relatable?
Yeah, that panda, it looks like Kevin James with wearing a black Lone Ranger mask.
Exactly.
And who doesn't love Kevin James?
Right. Wearing a black Lone Ranger mask. And then the last one is the potential to generate satisfaction, right? So let's say that you see a panda. And you're like, I want to know what that is. I want to know all about pandas.
Yeah.
And you find out pandas are really boring. There's not a lot to them. There's not a lot to be said. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
It's not going to generate much satisfaction intellectually. So if you have an animal that checks all these boxes, it's relatable. Your society feels good about it. It's cute. It's cuddly. It stands out on its own.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to offer intellectually.
Yeah.
You've got a charismatic animal.
Yeah. There wow. I like that.
Well, tell Jay Lorimer that you like it.
Jay Lorimer, if you're out there, that was wonderful work. So we're going to cover sort of the good points and bad points about this characterization. But when it works is when the charismatic megafauna functions as what's known as an umbrella species, which is to say, because people are giving money to some sort of conservation effort toward this animal, it's helping to protect and serve other animals within that ecosystem.
It's a cop.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way that
which makes sense.
It does. You have to kind of step back and think about it, though. You know, like, how does protecting, say, like a wolf help the rest of the ecosystem? Well, a wolf feeds on smaller animals.
I thought you were about to say small children.
Under the right circumstances, unfortunately.
Yeah.
They'll feed on smaller animals.
Yeah.
Which, say, feed on insects.
Mm-hmm.
Which, say, feed on plants. So that means that if a wolf is happy and healthy in its normal ecosystem, that means that all these other species that make up the food web that the wolf is a part of must be happy and healthy too.
Right.
So in that sense,
it's all linked.
It's an umbrella species, like you said, where if you take care of the wolf, you're inadvertently taking care of the rest of them. So that's fine.
Yeah. And in one of the interviews in here, who was this person? Braccini. Was that from the Atlanta Zoo?
Yeah. Dr. Stephanie Braccini.
She says, and this is, to me, kind of says it all, it would be nice if endangered species status was correlated to a charismatic variable, but that's not necessarily or often the case. And she brings up the point of mussels. Spengler's freshwater mussel is critically endangered, but has no charisma. So, you know, there's no correlation there. In the case of the panda, there is, because they were endangered, and I think now they're just threatened.
Right.
But there's not always that correlation. She's like, it'd be kind of great if this was, you know, this was always the case.
Yeah, I think the point underlying the use of charismatic megafauna is just knowing that something is on the verge of going extinct has been proven not to be enough to get humans to act to do anything about it.
I know, isn't that sad?
It has to be cute, too.
Yeah.
And so what conservationists are saying after, God, you're so stupid, they say, okay, we can work with this. See this cute little animal? Save this animal. give us your money, and then they take it and actually use it for the whole ecosystem rather than just the animal.
Yeah, and that's such a human thing. Like, the same can and has been said about, like, kidnapped children or the sex trade. Like, mm-hmm. it takes some, you know, cute little blonde girl to make the news.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's kind of always been the case.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Well, and it's not just social either. It's not just society, although society definitely values attractiveness. There have been plenty of studies about people with facial differences, right?
Which is, oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, the people used to call them disfigured people. Now it's called facial differences. I think that's a great improvement, right?
Sure.
But there have been studies with babies, and they prefer people who don't have facial differences, who follow more like a typical facial profile or feature, right?
Right.
Compared to people who have facial differences. And that suggests that it's hardwired.
So babies pick up on this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the idea that you're basically born to prefer, say, facial symmetry or something like that.
Right.
It really kind of falls in line with this, too. It's almost like you can't help but say, yes, I care about this cute little baby panda or whatever because it's cute. Whereas this other thing that is way more endangered and deserves our attention way more because yeah. it's actually a keystone species, which we'll talk about. It's not cute, so I can't really care about it. I'm not hardwired to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of like that thing we've talked about before, and I think recently, where you prefer things that look like you because evolutionarily anything else back in Tuk-Tuk's days mm-hmm. might have been a threat.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's easy to be hard on people, but when you kind of look at the evolutionary aspect of it, like, you know, well, it's easy to understand as well.
Right. Yeah. That whole in-group, out-group thing.
Yeah.
If we could get past that, it seems like we've evolved socially faster than we've evolved biologically.
I think you're right.
And that it just hasn't kept up. If we could just get past that whole in-group, out-group thing,
mm-hmm.
who knows what kind of world we'd be living in.
High school would be so great.
Yeah. Everybody'd be like, I love high school.
So, you talked about keystone species, that is a species that actually performs like a really vital role in their ecosystem.
Yeah. Where like if you took them out, the ecosystem would be so altered, so drastically altered, it probably wouldn't resemble itself any longer. It may just go away altogether.
Like a honeybee.
Or like coral.
Yeah.
You know? Where like if it's gone, you're in trouble. The thing is a lot of charismatic megafauna aren't keystone species. It actually doesn't really matter as far as the ecosystem's concerned
yeah.
if the panda's there. So there's some other species in that ecosystem that will play the same role that the panda will.
There's pandas right now listening that said, did you just hear that guy?
Let's go get him.
You ever seen a panda attack and kill a podcaster?
Yes, once.
It's very distressing.
Yeah, pandas are supposed to be super vicious.
Are they?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a koala.
Koalas as well?
They're all vicious, aren't they?
Did you see the giraffe give birth?
No. I heard a lot of people talking about sitting around and watching it forever and ever,
uh-huh.
but I didn't check it out.
It was hilariously sponsored. The webcam was sponsored by Toys R Us.
Oh.
You know Jeffrey Giraffe
yeah,
and
yeah.
his family? Well, there you go.
Interesting. No, it's no accident, right?
I don't think so.
There is also something called an indicator species. And this is like, if you want to know how an ecosystem is going, like let's say, how's the bayou doing? Let's go look at the crayfish.
Hmm.
Because that'll be a good indicator of how everything else is doing. If the crayfish numbers are down, that means something's going on.
Right. Or if the canaries are dying off in the coal mine, you've got gas.
Right.
Oh, but in the same way, though, an umbrella species can also be an indicator species
yeah.
in that, like, if the wolf can't survive, that means that all the other parts of the food web are messed up, too.
And they can also be an indicator species, too.
Yeah. Right. I don't think that's how indicator species is used every time, but
right.
it's an argument in favor of using charismatic megafauna for conservation.
So we've been talking a lot about, you know, people want to give to things that look like them and that are cute.
Mm-hmm.
This has been proven out with studies. We're not just bloviating. Well, I guess we are, but in addition to bloviating, right. We're not making stuff up because University of Arizona, go Wildcats, right?
Yes.
They did a study and did find that people support preservation efforts.
Oh, wait. No, that's the Sun Devils. No.
That's Arizona State.
Okay, yeah, Wildcats.
People did support efforts for animals that are attractive and that do look more human. And they even found that women support scary animals even less than men.
Right.
Like, you know, preservation for a snake population or maybe an insect or something.
Yeah. So this is like a Bernaysian approach to conservation.
Yeah.
Promoting conservation.
For sure.
Also, if you are using a charismatic megafauna for conservation, it actually can have beneficial results, right? It's not just like theoretically this should help. Like elephants, everybody loves elephants. Mm-hmm. There's not a person alive who doesn't like elephants in the West, I should say.
Right.
Who knows why? They're very cute. They're very sweet. They grieve over their dead. They do all sorts of interesting stuff, right? Yeah. And they've used elephants to basically as poster species for poaching campaigns.
Uh-huh.
A lot more than just elephants are poached. Everything from whale sharks to rhinos to, elephants are poached. But the idea of giving money to anti-poaching campaigns because you feel like, oh, I want to help that elephant.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a check. It's actually going and helping all these other species as well. There's supposedly like 35,000 species that are subject to poaching.
Yeah. And the other example they give in this article is the American bald eagle, which in the 60s and 70s, there was a big movement. They were like, this is America's bird.
Yeah.
Dang it.
You know, Ben Franklin wanted the turkey.
I think I did know that.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Not the turducken.
No.
That would have been even better.
That would have been something.
But yeah, in the 1670s, people were like, this is America's bird. We have to save the American bald eagle. And it worked. I think it's not even endangered any longer, right?
I don't think so.
My in-laws just saw one in Florida.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
Yeah.
Kind of just think, associate them with like Alaska and the Pacific Northwest, but all along the Gulf.
Yeah, there's like a whole group in the Gulf, and there's a whole group up in the Great White Way.
Yeah.
Well, above that.
What's the Great White Way?
I think that's Broadway, isn't it?
I don't know. I've never heard
that. It's either Broadway or Canada. I think it's Broadway, but I thought it was Canada because I heard Scott Thompson from the Kids in the Hall call Broadway that. So I was like, I guess he's talking about Canada. And then I found out it was Broadway. I think it's Broadway.
That was way more complex than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And the panda, you know, we mentioned their comeback. They have a 17% wild population increase over the past 10 or so years, largely because, you know, people love pandas.
Sure.
And they'll open up the wallet.
And again, I mean, not necessarily specifically with pandas, but with some species, if you can say their population's coming back in the wild,
mm-hmm.
then it also indicates that their ecosystem is getting better, healthy again as well.
Yeah.
So that's all well and good. It's good that it's made some money, right?
Sure.
But there's also plenty of criticisms to using charismatic megafauna. And let's take a break and we'll talk about it right after this. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
So, Chuck.
Yes.
What's the problem with using a cute panda or an elephant or something like that to get money for conservation? How could there be anything wrong with it?
Well, it's there, another word for this is the Bambi effect, like when you care only about the cute thing.
Right.
And they interviewed for our own article. It's interesting. The Atlanta Zoo zoologist was like, this is kind of great and it's working. Mm-hmm. And then they interviewed Christina Simmons of the San Diego Zoo Global, and she was a little more like, you know what, this is an 80s thing.
Yeah.
And we have moved past that here in San Diego.
Right.
Ignore that panda on the brochure.
Right.
But we've moved past it.
Yeah. I thought that was funny. The article pointed out that they had plenty of charismatic species on their website.
Yeah.
Even though they supposedly moved past it. So apparently in their projects, they stopped focusing on charismatic megafauna is what she was saying, right?
Yeah, she said that they, what they're trying to do is focus on an environment more than like, it's not like they don't focus on animals, but they try to look at it from an, I guess from a ecosystem point of view. Is that right?
I think so. Or they're looking more at animals that, have a bigger impact on their ecosystem.
Right.
Than charismatic megafauna might, right?
Yeah, and I don't think it was, or maybe it was her. They kind of put it in an interesting way that I hadn't thought of. It sort of creates a class struggle.
Yeah.
A bit, between, quote, wealthy animal, end quote, and a poor animal as far as, their richness being determined by their likability.
Yeah. And I mean, it's as simple as that. And it's not just public awareness of, you know, these species being endangered. Whereas there's plenty of other species that aren't charismatic that are way more in trouble and in danger of being extinct. It's scientific money too. Like scientists need funding to do their studies.
Yeah.
And if there's plenty of funding around to focus on pandas, but not say those mussels that went extinct.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a lot more scientific study directed toward pandas and saving pandas than saving those mussels. Even though those mussels probably keep their aquatic ecosystem clean, whereas pandas just poop everywhere and they don't do anything to clean up their ecosystem.
I wonder what the scientific ethics are. Maybe a researcher can tell us about where funding goes. Like if, you know, if they're like, well, let's divert some of that to this other species, whereas the individual who donated might be like, no, just pandas.
Well, that was actually brought up in the in this larger article, that survey of like the 70 other articles about charismatic megafauna, and they said that that could be an issue. Some donors want to know that their money is going toward what they donated it for.
Right.
And if you think you donated it to save pandas, and these guys are being like, yeah, yeah, we're helping pandas, but we're also helping these snakes. But you hate snakes?
Yeah.
You might be unhappy that your money's helping snakes, though the snakes really need the help.
Yeah, one thing I have noticed with donation sites is a lot of times they'll have that, and then let's say, would you also like to donate $5 to the general fund?
Right.
Stuff, you know, so you can help the snake.
Yeah.
And there's not one that says the general fund, and no snakes.
Right, no, there's not an option. You're donating to snakes with the general fund, you know?
Yeah.
There's also the issue of it being a totally unscientific idea.
Right.
It's completely subjective. Like, even here in the West, people are like, well, lions are beautiful and majestic. But if you talk to school kids in Tanzania, they'll say, actually, lions are quite fearsome because we live near them. And
right.
I have a friend whose uncle was killed by a lion.
So I hate them.
Right. So you can't even agree on what animals have charisma even. Even, you know, it seems like a foregone conclusion to us. The people who are carrying out these conservation efforts and who are donating the conservation dollars aren't the ones who have to actually live with these animals as well, right?
Yeah.
So if you're an organization who's getting conservation dollars from these people to save these animals that the locals actually hate,
right,
you're going to have a problem here.
Yeah.
So what are some of the solutions to these? What can you do as a conservationist if you're facing this issue where you need money, but you also need to be realistic?
I have a feeling you have an answer in wait.
Well, one of the great suggestions that I've run across is, you can talk about these species that people like, but just talk about them in realistic terms.
And don't say how cute they are and all that stuff.
Yeah, or don't make it sound like they're the most important animal on the planet.
Right.
Like, put it in its relative context, right? Or, this one is even better, take an actual keystone species from an ecosystem that's in real danger of becoming extinct, and then put your marketing people to work on creating charisma for that animal.
Yeah, because you know what? They could do that in most cases.
Right.
Unless it's a Komodo dragon.
No, it's actually a really great example of them doing that.
Well, I was about to, the reason I mentioned that is because that was one of my favorite animals at the Atlanta Zoo. Was I could sit around and watch that Komodo dragon for days.
Yeah.
He was so cool looking.
Right.
But a lot of people might not think so.
So,
like Sharon Stone's ex-husband.
Apparently there was a huge, what?
Sharon Stone's ex-husband was bitten by a Komodo dragon, very famously.
Was he hurt?
Yeah.
Did he die?
No.
Oh.
That's not why he's an ex.
Did he lose a toe?
Well, I should say he's an ex because he got bitten by the Komodo dragon, but just because she was embarrassed by it, so she divorced him.
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
She's like, oh my God, I can't even go out in public now.
Right.
See you later.
You've mortified me.
Yeah, I figured you would have known about that. It was a very,
no.
I mean, not funny for him. But
funny for everybody
else.
No, but apparently there was a big local push to save Komodo dragons. They were not well liked, but they put some top marketing people on it and gave the Komodo dragon charisma. Like, just pointing to a panda bear and being like, pretty cute, huh? That doesn't take any marketing skill.
No.
It takes real marketing skill to take a hated and reviled animal that needs human help and make it charming.
You know who could solve all of this?
God.
Disney.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All you got to do is make a movie about a Komodo dragon as the hero.
Sure.
And literally, that would change everything.
Somebody needs to thaw out Walt Disney.
Thaw him out?
Yeah.
Oh, is he still frozen?
I don't know if that's true or an urban legend or not.
We should get Holly from Stuff You Missed in History Class in here.
Well, we did an episode on cryogenics, and I'm sure we covered it, but that was a long time ago.
Holly, for all I know, might have Walt Disney frozen in her house.
She might.
You know?
Being held captive.
So should we talk a little bit about biodiversity?
I think we should.
And why that's important? Because that's kind of what we're talking about here in a roundabout way, is a healthy ecosystem depends on biodiversity. And that doesn't just mean what's known as species diversity or species richness, which is, you know, a lot of different animals.
Well, that's what most people think of when they think of biodiversity.
Yeah, it's a lot more complex than that.
Yeah, so there's species diversity, like you said. There's also genetic diversity, which is the combined number of genes that's available to species worldwide.
Yeah.
And the more genetic diversity a species have, the easier it can withstand things like disease.
Yeah.
Some individuals are going to die, But overall, the species should be able to survive it because there's probably a gene in there somewhere that can combat this disease or is immune to this disease, and they'll develop an immunity to it, and the species will go on. So species diversity is a very important type of biodiversity, too.
Yeah, like bald eagle, again, good example.
Genetic diversity, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Bald eagle, good example, because they are spread out all over, well, not all over, but in those certain places in North America.
Right.
Gives them good genetic diversity, thus they were able to come back. The cheetah, not so much back in the day. There was only one species, I think, around 10,000 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't see what happened to the species, or the cheetah, did you?
What, all the other species?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's pretty bizarre. Just one survived.
Yeah, the Acinonyx jubatus.
I think that's right.
In Africa. And that was a problem because when you just have one species, you're inbreeding a lot and your genetic diversity goes way down. And all of a sudden you one thing could come along and wipe you out.
Exactly.
One disease or something.
Right. And then there's also ecosystem diversity, which is the number of different types of ecosystems around the world. The more you have of those, the better off you are. It's kind of like biodiversity is a really good example of not having all of your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
You want to diversify. It's the same thing with stocks and bonds.
That's right.
You know?
And as humans, biodiversity is a big deal because of medicine that we use that comes from plants, let's say. What else? Clothes that we wear from plants and animal fibers.
Sure. What we eat, that's another big one too. Can't forget that.
Yeah, and the point is it's all linked. Like you talked about earlier, the wolf population will have or the honeybee population will have an effect on down the line because it's all one big linked puzzle. And something like colony collapse disorder can foul it up to the point where just because the honeybee, the crop production as a whole in the United States is in trouble.
Right, right. So it seems kind of remedial to go over it, but it's important to point out like what's at stake here when you're talking about extinction, right?
It's not like, oh, we don't have honey anymore.
Right. No,
so
there's
sad.
The entire ecosystems can fail. And when entire ecosystems fail, the world gets a little less biodiverse. And when that happens, it's a little more fragile and it just keeps getting set up more and more and more for some sort of larger collapse. That's more than just say a honeybee collapse.
Right.
And apparently the big one, the big daddy as far as reduction of biodiversity goes, well, there's two of them. One is invasive species.
Yeah, I didn't know. We should do a show on... We were going to do one on kudzu at one point.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's two separate shows or not.
I don't know.
But I didn't realize that invasive species cause that much damage.
Yeah, there's something like half of all of the extinctions, special extinctions, since the 1600s, they attribute to invasive species.
That's crazy.
Where it's just, you know, you've got a species that's introduced into a new ecosystem, doesn't have any predator, so it preys on other things and reproduces unchecked and just totally throws off the ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
Half of extinction comes from invasive species. And then another 36% apparently comes from deforestation, right?
Yeah. I mean, the other two big ones are overhunting, like we were talking about with like the rhino and elephants and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And back in our pigeons episode, literally caused the extinction of the passenger pigeon. And then climate change is the fourth, which, sort of just getting started on that one. So that's an increasingly becoming a problem with animals forced from their habitats.
Yeah.
But deforestation is the big daddy.
Yeah. And apparently one of the big issues with deforestation, although there has been a lot of headway made with slowing deforestation.
Yeah.
But the rainforest is particularly vulnerable because it covers about 7% of Earth's land mass, but it houses about half of Earth's species.
That's crazy.
Right? So there's that problem with a lot of eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
If you mess with that basket, you're in big trouble. I think that's how the saying goes, right?
Yeah.
So one of the problems with deforestation is that if you are a developing economy and you've got a lot of economic activity that can be gained by cutting down rainforest, it's kind of tough to fault that economy.
Right.
To say, what are you doing? You know, we as humanity need that. That's nature's pharmacy.
Yeah.
Right? there's also apparently a lot of issue with indigenous peoples in rainforests as well. That a lot of them are like, well, they're indigenous people. They know what they're doing. Well, they're also like deforesting the rainforest themselves as well. So there's a lot of programs that have been put into place to reduce deforestation. And like I said, they're having an effect. Apparently, within the last couple of years, deforestation has fallen like 49% year over year.
In Brazil, yeah.
In Brazil, which is where a lot of it was happening.
Yeah.
So the idea of deforestation not happening in Brazil or happening less, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and they have found a direct correlation between the local economy being less reliant on the rainforest and having like a healthy economy that doesn't depend on the rainforest and deforestation decreasing.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's not rocket science.
Right.
And thanks to Don Henley, it's all getting better.
Yep. And Al Gore and Tom Petty.
All Don Henley does is help the rainforest and be a jerk and sue people.
Who does he sue?
Dude, Don Henley sues everybody. Sue everybody.
Did he sue Sharon Stone's husband, ex-husband?
I think so. No, he's sort of a notorious jerk as far as like, oh, you used this Eagle song when you weren't supposed to, and I'm taking you to court.
And then I'll cut you, man.
He like one of my favorite bands, and then I'll cut you. That's not a peaceful, easy feeling at all.
No.
Acreville River, one of my favorite bands, they kind of reworked a Don Henley song as a homage and a tribute and didn't even like, I think they just put it on the web. They weren't like trying to make money off of it. And they're like, man, we love this song. We kind of reworked it and like, here it is. And he was like, shut it down. Get it off the internet. I'm suing you, little indie band.
Really?
Yeah. And, wow. And Will Sheff, their lead singer and songwriter, he was just sort of like, man, really? Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to have my Eagles tattoo graded off.
No more homages to you, sir.
All right. It was the end of Will Sheff's innocence about Don Henley.
I'm going to see Joe Walsh tomorrow night.
Tom Petty?
He's opening up.
Wow.
Which I'm pretty excited about.
Wow.
Usually openers at those big shows are, I don't know, they don't do a good job pairing them sometimes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like I saw Elton John once and he had these two cello players.
Yo-Yo Ma?
Yeah, and his brother.
Right.
No, it was kind of neat.
That's the only cello player I know.
I can't remember their names, and I'm sure there are tons of people that are fans of these guys because they play like AC/DC songs on the cello, and it's really
sort of,
I mean, it was cool.
Sure.
But I don't know, like I wanted to see Joe Walsh open up for everybody.
So, Yumi and I went and saw Cyndi Lauper a couple of years ago.
Oh,
and Dr. John opened for her.
Yeah, that's not a good pairing.
It was an amazing show. Both of them were.
Uh-huh.
But
isn't it weird, though?
It was like the Dr. John show happened, and then everyone left, and then everyone came in for Cyndi Lauper.
Interesting.
It was a very weird pairing.
Huh.
I think Cyndi Lauper is just like a Dr. John fan and wanted to make sure he got some money that year or something, right?
Yeah.
But it was like two different shows. Like an early show and a late show, as far as the audience was concerned.
Yeah, I saw Josh Groban open up for Iron Maiden. I thought that was strange, too.
Well, Bruce Dickinson is a well-known operatic singer.
Oh, well, that's true.
So I can kind of see that. Yeah? Tattooed millionaire pilot.
Man, what a great ending.
Oh, are we done?
Did you have anything else?
Nope.
All right.
If you want to know more about Iron Maiden, biodiversity, Josh Groban, Yo-Yo Ma, all that jazz,
yeah,
type those words in the search bar at howstuffworks.com and press your luck. Since I said press your luck, it's time for listener mail.
All that jazz, none of which was jazz.
No.
All right. I wonder where that term came from. Just,
I think it's from The Great White Way.
All right. I mean, there was a show called All That Jazz, but did they invent that?
I think so.
Okay. That solves it. This is from, I'm going to call this from our old buddy, Sarah Law, who's one of our oldest, I always say oldest, like she's 90.
Longest standing.
Yeah, long standing listeners from Canada. Hey guys, Josh, Chuck, and Jerry. Can you still not spell Jerry right, Sarah, after all these years?
How'd you spell it, Gary?
With a G.
Yeah, Gary.
J-E-R-I, everybody. I know you guys love animals, so I thought it'd be great if you could share this Stuff You Should Know Army story. Friend needed to give up his cat for adoption because he's moving out of the United States. Due to health issues of the cat, shelters would not take her. He was going to have to put her down, which I can't believe that's the solution.
Yeah.
Like, I gotta move, I'll just put you down. That aside. I put out a ninth hour call. I think it's 11th hour in the United States. Apparently in Canada, it's the ninth hour. I put out a ninth hour call to this Stuff You Should Know Army. And a nice person named Kevin Lyman asked everyone he knew if they could take her. And I'm happy to say that Kevin's coworker, Kat, with a K, picked Ava up, and Ava is the cat, from the vet appointment to save her life.
And then took her to be put down.
No. I saw a picture of this cat. It was adorable.
Yeah?
Never underestimate the power of the Stuff You Should Know Army. And I think she shared this on Facebook, and it, you know, kind of happened that way.
Yeah, that's great.
Love the show. Thank you for enriching our lives in so many ways. Your Canadian friend, Sarah, OXO.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. That was a great story.
Yeah.
And how appropriate for this.
I told Sarah that. Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
Cats are charismatic mini fauna.
I told Sarah we, in all likelihood, are going to be coming up to the Great White Way.
I hope that's what it is.
For some shows this year. We're going to be hitting Canada, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So listen,
at least one, right?
Yeah, we've been teasing these shows, but we're kind of nailing it all down. So listen up, all eight of you who still listen this deep into the show.
Sure.
We might be coming to a town near you.
Yeah, and let everybody else know.
Yes.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.